repeating verse 3. Simon Peter said to them, "I am going fishing." They said to him, "We will go with you." So Simon Peter, Thomas, Nathanael of Cana, the sons of Zebedee, James and John, and two other of his disciples went out and got into the boat. But that night they caught nothing. There are two things I would have been happy to never see again. One is fish. All my life I've been surrounded by fish. Fish in the morning, fish at night, one fish, two fish. Heck, I could have written a whole book about fish. Fish is what I ate 3 times a day, and fish is what I did 7 days a week. Sure, I never went hungry, but as a Jew under the thumb of Rome, perhaps I should count myself lucky to have had a livelihood at all. But generally, things stank. And I mean that literally. Stank like rotten fish. You know how hard it is to get a date when you reek like fish all the time? People would turn the other cheek and go the extra mile just to avoid being downwind of me. It's a lonely life as a fisherman, unless you count the clatter of cats always on my trail. So now you understand a little about why I could so easily drop the nets and shake the algae off my sandals when the Rabbi Jesus came by. And he said, "Hey, James, come and follow me. I'm going to make everything new." Heck, all he needed to say was, "I'm going to add a little chicken to your diet," and I would have went. But making all things new? I don't know about that. Is there really anything new under the sun? Does change of any real significance still happen? Some have said that swords will turn into plowshares, that justice will roll down like waters, and that the meek, yes, the meek of all people, will inherit the earth. Doesn't look that way to me. I just see a lot of toil and suffering. And who's to blame? I don't know, but a big part of it has to be that mountain, Rome. Who thinks it can be moved? Rome will never fall. The days are past when the seas would part and a path would emerge, taking us out of the empire to some promised land. Here, the sea never changes. It laps the shore with unrelenting regularity. I've just tried to stay afloat and pull some fish day after day. Well, it's no surprise I wasn't the only fisherman willing to break from the life we knew. My brother John was among the trawlers who followed Jesus, leaving our bewildered father Zebedee, shouting that some crazy demon had possessed us. Maybe he was right. And this leads me to the other thing I would have been glad to never see again. Simon Peter, or the Rock as we called him. I've known Peter since he was the size of a carp. We grew up together, explored the coves of Galilee together, sometimes got beat up by Roman soldiers together. Apparently we committed the offense of walking while Jewish, which is frowned upon around here. And when we came of age, we teamed up to form a little fishing business. I admit, that was a pretty good deal for me. Peter is a great fisherman. He had what it took, which is to say, he didn't have a whole lot going on up here to distract him from the task at hand. For Peter, it was fish first, think later. Leap before you look. Yes, he was impulsive to a fault, but he was also big-hearted, which helped me to put up with most of his eccentricities. Except for the whole fishing naked thing. I never got comfortable with that. As soon as that man's foot lands in a boat, his tunic drops to his ankles. And when the waves roll, well, he flops around like a fish out of water, if you know what I mean. I mean, it's like he never read Leviticus, which clearly says certain parts should remain private. But what are you going to do? I mean, he is named Peter, after all. And perhaps to no one's surprise, Peter jumped at Jesus' invitation. Why not? It looked like a grand adventure, leaving the sea, heading to the big city, a chance to tell those in authority what's what. And who knows, maybe we'd even ride the rabbi's coattails to the throne of Israel's restored kingdom. You don't catch an opportunity like that very often. Well, you might be wondering about this teacher, Jesus. In some ways, he was one of us. And in others, he couldn't have been more different. For example, as far as we knew, he had never fished a day in his life. But he sure had a thing about fish. He loved them all, this I know. Pickled, broiled, and fried just so. They were all delicious in his sight. His fish fascination wasn't lost on any of us disciples. Late at night and out of Jesus' earshot, you could hear Andrew and Mary Magdalene and the other wisecracking disciples say things like, "Is it true Jesus' mother is the blessed sturgeon? Is that why he thinks he's cod almighty? Or perhaps the holy mackerel? And why does he think the bass will be first, and the first will be bass?" It's discipleship humor. Fish clearly inspired Jesus. Early on, we were chilling at Cana at the post-wedding fish fry when Jesus said to me, "You know what goes well with fish? Pinot Grigio." Who knew? But before long, our pitcher of water miraculously turned into the best Pinot I ever had. Ah, forgive me for going on and on about those good old days. The ones before things took an abrupt turn. I thought at times we knew where all this was headed, what it meant to follow Jesus, what he was even all about. But other times it was clear I and the others had no idea. Perhaps it was most evident when Jesus was telling us once again that he was going to be killed in Jerusalem and raised up 3 days later, whatever that meant. Peter's eyes got real big, and he blurted out that this would never happen as long as he was with Jesus. That seemed like a courageous, even loving thing to say. Almost wished I had said it myself. That is until Jesus turned on Peter, eyes narrowed, and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are a stumbling block for me." Wow, that was strong. But credit to Peter, he never stopped trying. Kept getting up after being knocked down. Maybe he was braver than the rest of us. Or maybe, well, like I said, he didn't think things through all the time. I mean, the guy thought he could walk on water, for crying out loud. But Jesus seemed to appreciate his willingness, his eagerness, his openness to that which most of us couldn't imagine. That seemed to be a lot more important to Jesus than how much smarts you had. I suppose that's why Jesus said, "On you, Peter, although dumb as a rock, I will build my church." I'm pretty sure that's the way he said it. But it wouldn't surprise me if that gets edited before it's ever written down. The point is, it didn't seem to matter to Jesus if occasionally you screwed up, or if you didn't study in the finest temples. Rather, Jesus seemed willing to stake everything on people like Peter. Well, anyway, things don't always work out like you think they might. Sometimes they go a whole lot worse. I'm not going to spell it out. The arrest, the torture, the cross. One day everything is going swimmingly, and the next, well, let's just say that there's a lot that died that week. And if you don't know what that's like, well, maybe you haven't lived long enough. And Peter, oh my, you can't screw up any worse than he did. And not once, but three times, there by the red-hot coals of the courtyard fire, crowing like a rooster. Jesus never heard of the guy. I mean, if that didn't make clear that this whole "I will make everything new" tour was a misguided fantasy, I don't know what would. So that's why I'm back out on the sea this morning, sitting on this godforsaken boat with these godforsaken fishing nets and with godforsaken Peter, who's once again positioned across from me in all his naked glory. Can't get any worse than that. Well, actually, it can. I forgot to tell you, the seven of us had been fishing all night, and we hadn't caught anything. Nothing. I mean, the one thing, maybe the only thing we were actually good at in life, isn't even working anymore. Talk about utter abandonment. All I could do was cry out in a voice like thunder in my despair. Apparently, my outburst caught the attention of someone on the beach. Or maybe it caused the others in the boat to look around. Either way, we became aware of a man standing there. We stared at him. He stared at us. And then he said, "You have no fish, do you?" Well, that was perceptive. "No. Try fishing on the right side of the boat. You will do better there." There's a time for questioning, for arguing, for holding fast to cynicism. And there's a time for simply being open. Peter is good at that. Open to the still, small voice. Or in this case, the voice on the beach. Isn't that what Jesus said when a deaf man was brought to him? And he laid his hands on him and looked to the heavens. He didn't say, "Be cured." He said, "Be open." And that's when the healing started. So we followed his suggestion, threw our nets to the right. And that's when the healing started. That's when all things became abundantly new. And I don't mean a little bit new. I mean 153 fish knew. What happened next won't surprise you at all. Peter, after hearing John identify who was on the beach, bolted upright, pulled on his clothes, and dove headfirst into the sea. He swam toward the shore like those possessed pigs we'd seen before, his heavy tunic dragging all the way. Why you disrobe to fish and get dressed to swim, I'll never know. But given what Peter had gone through, maybe that makes sense. There in the Garden of Eden, when the man and woman had turned from God and felt ashamed, they too, in the presence of God, covered their nakedness. Before long, we were all standing on the shore, close to the fire, close to Jesus. But strangely, none of us were saying a thing, not even Peter. The only sounds were the waves against the boat, the sizzling of fish on the fire, and Peter's tunic dripping on the rocks. We were waiting for Jesus to say something, anything. Maybe he'd bring up our failure, how when it really mattered, we had turned away. Or maybe he'd reference the last time Peter was around a charcoal fire with three missed opportunities to confess the truth. But instead, Jesus simply said, "So, who would like some breakfast?" The fish tasted different that morning. It tasted, I don't know, new. Everything seemed new. Not new as in young, shiny, polished. The boat was still weathered. We fishermen were still scragging, smelled bad. Rather, it was a messy kind of new. The kind of new that looks like addicts marking their first week of sobriety, or like reconciliation after a relationship had come undone, or like finally seeing the sun after a storm of losses. It's like the transformation that comes whenever people choose forgiveness over the oh-so-tempting retaliation, or when people summon the strength to say, "I was wrong. I'm sorry." Often this new is a thing you never saw coming, never even hoped for, but ends up being what was needed all along. I see things in new ways now. What was buried is now alive. We've been resurrected from the graves we dig for ourselves through our denials, our cynicism, our arrogance, our pride. And this is what God keeps making new over and over again. Thanks. be to God. Thanks be to Peter. Thanks be to all those who keep themselves open to the startling abundance of God. Amen.